We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Ryan Finley and Micah Lev. And before every Arizona Wildcats home football game, we record a live podcast at Frog and Firkin. It's been a few weeks since we've been at Frog and Firkin, guys.
Yeah, and we only have one more left after
one more.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's good to be back, though. Frog and Firkin treats us great.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's different compared to a few weeks ago. There's more spider webs. There's more Halloween decorations up.
And you're, I think, dressed up?
Kind of. This was a costume that I put together in a grand total of 5 minutes.
Let me see. Curly reddish hair, Pac-12 Conference of Champions t-shirt.
Tie-dye t-shirt.
If you were smoking something funny, I'd say you're Bill Walton. Are you Bill Walton?
The Conference of Champions, of course.
It's the greatest costume in the history of the world.
What are your guys' costumes for Halloween?
I'm going to be arriving late from work. That's going to be my costume. Let me complain about Halloween real quick. It's the only holiday all year that is an after 5 p.m. only event. That you don't get the day off. You got to rush home and do it, right?
That's true. I didn't think of that.
Yes. So I'll be trick-or-treating with a drink in my hand, I hope.
I got nothing for you this year, man.
Nothing?
I'm on the DL.
It's true.
As you know, I can't go trick-or-treating.
Are there any famous cast people? People in casts?
I mean, I'm going to sit on my porch and hand out candy.
You can wear a Derrick Rose jersey.
Oh.
It's your knee problem, right? You're a Chicago guy.
Yeah. He's the only guy who's ever had a knee injury.
I'm thinking of Chicago guys with knee problems.
Do you have a Derrick Rose jersey at home?
I don't have a Derrick Rose jersey at home now.
All right, guys. As much as I'd love to talk about Halloween, we're going to talk some Arizona Wildcats football, getting ready for this game against Oregon State. And as I say this, a guy walks in with a Teddy Bruschi Desert Swarm jersey.
That's right.
That's pretty awesome.
That's beautiful.
Where can we get one of those?
Do you think there's going to be an inspirational element to this game on Saturday because of the throwback uniforms, because of the defensive coordinator change? I mean, are we going to see like a really fired up Arizona Wildcats squad, and will that have any impact on the game?
No.
Do you believe in
no?
No.
Okay.
And here's the thing. I'm a uniform guy, right? I'm a football guy. I love the intangible part of it when we talk about matchups. The Desert Swarm team, these kids were not born when the Desert Swarm team existed. Most of these kids can't name Teddy Bruschi, would be my guess. You know, maybe because he's on TV, a couple of them can. No, I don't think that's the case. I think this is, if there's any motivation, it's coming from the fact that, you know, this defense is up against a wall. Yeah. Regardless of who the coordinator is, I think this defense needs to step up, needs to play better. Chuck Cecil, I think, is going to simplify things. I think that they're going to be sort of basic and aggressive in this game. That's where the motivation is going to come. And secretly, I think the motivation is going to come from this might be their last winnable game of the year. You know, I think that they need to go sort of establish their dominance against an Oregon State team that's probably better than it looks.
Well, I was talking about this on radio earlier this week. It kind of seems like if Arizona didn't fire Marcel Yates and they didn't have the throwback jerseys, what would be the main topic that we're talking about right now? If none of those happened, two quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a footnote in the grand scheme of things for this week.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And maybe that's by design. Maybe the more we're talking about the defense and the more they talk about the defense, the easier it's going to be to, you know, maybe work two quarterbacks into the game on Saturday. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Kevin Sumlin, though, gave much thought to that whole narrative when he made his decision to fire Marcel Yates. Michael Lev?
I don't think so. I think it's just a coincidence, but it's also true that the narrative has shifted away from the quarterback quote unquote controversy that Kevin Sumlin has tried to avoid. But we can talk about it if you'd like. Probably the best example I can think of a successful two quarterback system happened during the Desert Swarm era, 1998. Mm-hmm. Wildcats, right, with Keith Smith and Ortiz Jenkins. Yep. And they found a way to make it work. Maybe that was a unique moment in time. Maybe that was a unique coach in Dick Tomey who had a certain way about him where you could make something like that work.
But they made it work. That 1998 team.
I know we've only
seen it for one game, but we haven't seen it work.
I don't hate it. That's the way I put it earlier. Because the styles of the two players are so different. Mm-hmm. And if you can make it kind of work internally, it makes it hard on the opposing defense when you don't necessarily know which quarterback's going to come out. Totally different types of styles, different types of plays that they're going to run, different rhythm to the offense. Mm-hmm. So I think it can be effective in that way. It's just when you get to the second half and game flow mm-hmm. comes into play, the score of the game, situations, mm-hmm. that's when it becomes really tricky. Kevin Sumlin was saying that they were having a debate on the sideline. Should we put Grant Gunnell back in the game here with 3 minutes left or whatever? Mm-hmm. And they were like, do we really want to put the freshman in that situation? So it's hard. It's a hard thing to do. I don't think it's an impossible thing to do. I think it can work. And it's interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that, what's that old cliche about quarterbacks being like girlfriends? You know this one, Michael?
No, go ahead, Brian. The floor is yours.
If you have two, you probably don't have any. Sort of.
I didn't know that was related to girlfriends.
I think it's
sure.
girlfriends.
If you say
Rich,
so.
Rich Rodriguez brought up pizzas a couple years ago. He's like, it's like saying if you have two pizzas, you have none. It just doesn't make sense.
I don't know. To me, the question is, which quarterback gives them the better chance to win right now? I don't know if I can answer that question. I don't know if we've seen enough from Grant Gunnell to answer that question honestly. I've talked to Lev sort of off mic about this. What are they trying to do? Are they trying to win now? Or are they trying to build toward the future? You see Grant Gunnell getting more and more snaps, and you go, they're building toward 2021 and beyond. But then they fire their defensive coordinator with a month left in the season because they want to get to six wins. So what is it? To me, there are some mixed messages being put out, I think.
Well, the message with the defensive coordinator change is 100% we want to win now. Mm-hmm. I think with the quarterbacks that they're not sure which one gives them the best chance to win now, so they're going to throw both of them out there.
And do you think they kind of owe it to Khalil Tate for what he's been able to do over the last couple of years?
I think there's some element to that. I don't know whether there is or not. I do know that Kevin Sumlin's been really loyal to Khalil since he's been here. He's protected him. He's stuck with him through thick and thin. Been a lot of ups and downs. Both in terms of his play and also just sort of body language, interactions on the sidelines, interactions with the media after games. They've had to work through a lot of stuff. And it would be, it would be hard to bench a senior quarterback who's accomplished as much as he has, for the final three or four games of his senior season. That's just a tough call to make.
Right. I think the fact that they even considered sort of doing that in the middle of the season says something maybe about what they think of Grant Gunnell too. I think that there's a belief over there that Grant Gunnell may give them a better chance to win right now. But obviously we'll see more about it against Oregon State. I think this is it'll be very interesting to see what they do sort of with the homecoming crowd playing at home.
Here's what I would do. Mm-hmm. Hand the ball off a lot.
Yeah.
Yep. I would try to run. I would try to make this one of those games where they're running 50 times for 300 yards. We saw them do it against Oregon State each mm-hmm. of the last two seasons. I think they have, nearly 1,000 yards or something mm-hmm. rushing against the Beavers the last couple of years. They did it up in their place. Oregon State is a much improved team this year, but they are next to last in the Pac-12 in run defense. Mm-hmm. So if there's a vulnerability on this team, I think that's it. Mm-hmm. So to me, no matter who the quarterback is, I would like to get the ball to J.J. Taylor a lot, Gary Brightwell, Nathan Tilford, whatever the running back rotation is this week, and make that the foundation of my game plan.
Does this mean more design runs for Khalil Tate? Because you saw against Stanford last week, you know, he had a couple runs. One of them was a 57-yard touchdown. It was the most rushing yards he's had in a game since the 2017 season, in a Pac-12 game at least.
In a Pac-12 game, yeah.
Since 2017.
Well, if he's healthy and he's willing, then absolutely, 100%. You know, those zone read plays can be really effective because they just cause hesitation in the defense when you run that particular action, and that can open things up for guys, whether it's JJ or Nathan or Michael Wiley or Bam or, you know, whatever running backs they throw out there. I just think that's a good sound strategy to against this particular opponent, number one. And I just kind of like the mentality of kind of trying to be the more physical team. You know, like, I feel like since I've been on the beat, Ryan, that like the most inspirational games that they've played have been those ones where they just run the ball down the opponent's throats.
Yeah. That ASU game from a couple of years
ago. Or the Texas Tech game this year where they had the 99-yard drive and they were all runs. The ASU game, Oregon State a couple times. I mean, we've talked about this, again, like as Ryan said, off mic, but like, what's the identity of Arizona football?
Defense and running the football.
Is it defense?
Really?
Is it defense?
Well, when was the last time they played defense or ran the football?
I'm saying when Arizona is at their best in program history,
okay,
their defense
has been their identity. Right now, pick something.
Oh, for this team. I thought you were talking about just Arizona football.
I think for better or worse, their identity on this team is Khalil Tate.
Yeah, it might be. And if he's the embodiment of what your identity is, then it makes a lot of sense that they'd be inconsistent from week to week, because he is.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about this many times. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's erratic as a player. And if you get the good version of him, I mean, it's amazing. And you can put up a lot of points.
Mm-hmm. So what's I know injuries aren't usually talked about with the Arizona Wildcats, but they have a handful of injuries, and guys are recovering. One of them, Gary Brightwell, where's he been over the last couple of weeks? You know, he's been RB number two for most of the season up until a couple weeks ago, and I've only really seen him on punt coverage.
Yeah, he got a couple snaps last week against Stanford. Hasn't really been firmly in the mix as far as the running backs go, and I don't know if that's because he's injured. I don't know if that's because of performance. But I do know that they have other options that they like. And if they threw Nathan Tilford in there as the second guy, I don't think any fans would complain about that because he's been really effective. And you know, the interesting thing to me about last week was Michael Wiley, first time in his career here, did not have a touch on offense. I'm not even sure he had a snap on offense. And that's a guy that they've used as a weapon out of the backfield, as a receiver. They have found a way to work him in at some point in every game, and they did not last week. I don't know if that's just one of those things, but I thought it was kind of weird.
So who are X factors in this game against Oregon State? I know we'll give our predictions and really break down what we think is going to happen, but when you look at X factors, and it doesn't have to be specific players or just some things, headlines that you think will happen in this game that is crucial for Arizona getting a win.
To me, I think it starts with starting. I think you got to come out strong. If you're Arizona, I think that there's going to be a good crowd for Arizona football at this game. I think it's homecoming. There's so many question marks about your new defense, about who your starting quarterback is, about the health of some of your running backs. I think they need to come out. They want, you know, receive the opening kickoff, drive and score, make a stop, drive and score, and you've got this. Maybe that's a little cliche, maybe that's a little trite, but I think they got to come out strong. And if they do, they could win big.
I think an early turnover forced by the defense would be a huge thing in this game. You're looking at a quarterback in Jake Luton who's thrown 16 touchdown passes and only one interception this year, which is obviously an exceptional touchdown to interception ratio. That's one of the stats I really look at when I evaluate quarterback play. It's a sixth-year guy who got an extra year, veteran quarterback. But if they can turn the ball over, that can really amp up the crowd, kind of get everybody going. They have not forced turnovers lately. They have 13 takeaways on the season, but six came in that first game. So that's seven over the last seven games, and I think it's three over the last five games. And when you're struggling on defense, which they obviously have been, and even struggling on offense at times, getting a turnover, getting some great field position, that can really spark the team and kind of just turn things in the right direction.
Yeah, and when you talk about turnovers here, and you know me, I like to get specific. look at on the defensive line what Trayvon Mason has been able to do over the last few weeks. One thing that's really jumped out to me about him is he's so tall, and when he wants to, he puts his hand up and he gets a finger on the ball and it deflects the pass. Maybe we see one of those against Oregon State where it deflects and you see a linebacker or you see a defensive back making a play. But I think it all starts up front, Trayvon Mason getting to the quarterback. Maybe Jalen Harris can finally get to the quarterback.
Be nice.
Well, he's been the one guy who has been getting to the quarterback, right?
Well, as I mentioned in the paper a couple times this week, they have the worst pass rush in Power 5.
Yeah.
Statistically and anecdotally, if you watch them. I mean, they have 7 sacks on the season. No Power 5 team has fewer than that. They're on pace for 11 for the entire year, which would be the second fewest that they've ever had since they joined the conference. I mean, where have these guys been? Mm-hmm. You know, I know Jalen Harris has 3.5 sacks, but there are just long stretches in games where he kind of disappears. J.B. Brown, everyone kind of thought he'd be a breakthrough player this year. Kylan Wilborn hasn't been the same, you know, since his freshman year. That's, to me, where it all starts on defense, the root of their problems on that side of the ball. Putting pressure on the quarterback, creating negative plays. The sack yardage that they've generated this year, or even tackle for loss yardage, is... it's like epically low. I mean, like way lower than they've had in any recent season. And it's when you're never putting the other team in those compromising situations, third and long, it makes it really hard.
You think Chuck Cecil, now him being the interim defensive coordinator, do you think he looks at the guys he has on defense and gives them a longer leash? He allows them to play more freely because he served as an analyst, but he hasn't coached these guys. He doesn't have that one-on-one interaction like Yates or John Rushing. So do you think maybe he steps in and says, you know what, I'm going to trust your guys' instincts. I'm going to coach, but I'm going to allow you guys to play freely.
I don't know. I think he's simplifying stuff. This is what interim guys do. This is what people who take over jobs in the middle of the season do, right? Like, let's look back at, remember when Tim Kish was Arizona's head coach after they fired Mike Stoops. I mean, he simplified things. The simpler you make it, the faster guys can play, the freer guys can play. And I think with this defense, there maybe have been too many little wrinkles the last couple of weeks. I think that Yates put in things, you know, for one game, and then the next week he put in something else. I think Chuck Cecil's going to try to keep this very basic, try to get this team playing free and confidently, and go from there.
I think that we're not going to see a ton of changes this week because they just don't have that much time to implement them. But they do have a bye next week before going to Oregon, and I would imagine that would give them, you know, that gives them an extra week to kind of reassess, evaluate the personnel, maybe throw in a couple different looks or change the lineup in certain ways. But they need to play with energy and intensity from the get-go against Oregon State. You were up there at Stanford, Justin. They just looked like flat and slow on defense. Like, they just weren't making any sort of disruptive plays, and it showed on the scoreboard.
They weren't getting to the ball fast enough. Cameron Scarlett was doing whatever he wanted to against Arizona's defense. And, you know, Oregon State, they got a pretty solid rushing attack.
And they're just a really good offense in general. So. I mean, they have the leading receiver in the Pac-12 in Isaiah Hodgins, and I'm not sure who the best matchup for him is. Maybe it's Christian Roland Wallace, who's really been one of the bright spots of this defense. I'd say one of the best things you can say about CRW is you haven't noticed him that much lately, which for a cornerback is usually
a good sign.
As a freshman.
Yeah, they're not picking on him because he's been that good, and he's got a big upside for sure. But like I said, veteran quarterback. Not sure if Jamar Jefferson's going to be back for this game, but they have Artavius Pierce, who's a very good veteran back, averaging 6 yards a carry. So, you know, offensively, this is a really good team. It's also a team that's won 2 road games in the Pac-12 already this year. And that's not something that Arizona can say, that's for sure.
All right. So we'll talk more Arizona-Oregon State as we get ready to do our Pac-12 picks.
We had a line change here.
In the middle of the podcast. Yeah. What's the line now?
Well, it's Spears, Lev, and White.
I thought you were talking about the line for the game.
Oh, no. Follow along here, Justin.
Sorry.
Ryan has stepped out for the moment. Alec White has stepped in.
Yeah.
Hi, Alec.
Hey, welcome aboard. We're doing this.
I'm excited.
subbing in for Ryan. He's off handling some business with our colleague Bruce Pasco. I'll just kind of, I know we're doing a big football thing, but Jamal Baker from Arizona Basketball has been ruled eligible for the upcoming basketball season.
Wait, what?
Yeah, transfer out of Kentucky. They cleared his waiver form, and so Jamal Baker will be the backup point guard for Arizona Basketball, and we're handling that situation right now.
Well, that's huge news.
It's been handled.
It's been handled?
It's been handled. I'm back. It's been handled.
The NCAA works in mysterious ways.
It's weird,
man. If you try to figure out like what the logic is with these waiver situations, you'll just drive yourself insane.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like Alex Barcelo can play right away at BYU, the logic being that he didn't play much last year. It's strange. I mean, they went from never granting anything to basically granting everything.
Yeah, I think they're just
very confusing.
Yeah, and they're just overwhelmed with so many requests that maybe they're just like, all right, whatever.
But that's huge for Arizona.
Shuffle it along.
Because Brandon Williams is out for the season with that knee issue. So Arizona's got some depth at the guard spot. So that's a win for the Wildcats this year. Alec, thanks for sharing the news, man. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Came in just in time.
All right, let's talk some Pac-12 football with our Pac-12 pick'ems this week. Alec, this is your second time doing the Pac-12 pick'ems, correct? Because you were here last podcast at Frog and Ferkin.
Yeah, before the Washington game.
Okay, so we're going to get another go-around with Pac-12 pick'ems. And, guys, there's some interesting matchups for this weekend. Number 9, Utah against Washington. 1 p.m. kickoff up there in Seattle on national TV. This is huge for the conference.
Sure is.
Utah and Oregon, the last two hopes for the conference in the college football playoff. What do you guys got?
When was the last time Washington was an underdog at home? Washington's getting 3 points playing at home in the cold in Pac-12 play. To me, that's pretty incredible and rare, and probably a testament to what Las Vegas thinks of Utah. I mean, Utah's number 9 in the country. They're 7-1. I'm going to call the upset here because I think that sort of whatever's worst for the Pac-12 is typically what happens. And so I like the Huskies here playing at home. I think the people have written them off. They've had their sort of, you know, people have written this team off. And I think that Washington has enough, as we saw a couple weeks ago, to play big boy football. And I think that they will out big boy the Utes on Saturday afternoon.
I'm going to go with Utah. I think their rushing attack is going to be too strong.
Moss.
Zach Moss, yep. Ryan says what can go wrong for the Pac-12 will go wrong. I'll go the opposite direction. I think Utah is going to keep winning through the rest of the regular season. They're number 9 right now, and I think it'll set up a potential match with Oregon in the conference title. I know I'm getting ahead of myself here with that pick, but I kind of like this Pac-12. It's going to come down to the final game for a potential spot in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I like that narrative, but I agree with Ryan. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm going to go with the Huskies. I don't see them losing two home games in a row. They had a bye last week to kind of recuperate. They will not be bothered by, you know, playing the style of game that Utah likes to play, physical, in the trenches kind of ball. That's Washington's ball, too. I know that defense travels. I've mentioned this many times, and Utah has maybe the best defense in the conference, one of the best in the country. But, you know, I think Washington is the winning side at home, and I like the idea of getting those 3 points as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a game that goes down to the wire.
Okay.
Washington is one hell of a team. Jacob Eason has shown us time and time again why he's one of the better quarterbacks in the Pac-12. But, you know, I'm with Alec just simply because I like the narrative. And, you know, I'm picking with my heart here because I want Utah to represent the South and play for a conference title. And you know what? Utah is a damn good program. They've been consistent for as long as I can remember them. I think they're due for a chance on the big stage, on the national spotlight. So I like Utah winning this game and pretty much punching their ticket to the Pac-12 championship.
Las Vegas has built lots of very tall, very expensive hotels because of people who bet the narrative.
Hey, I thought it was interesting, by the way, that the over-under in that game is 47.5 points, and the over-under in the Oregon State-Arizona game is 71.
Wow.
So that should tell you like the type of game that people envision, which doesn't always happen, of course, but I can see it definitely being one of those 20-17 kind of games, you know.
What about 5 p.m. on Fox. Good one. Oregon against USC at the Coliseum. Does this game have trap game written all over it for the Ducks? Or do you think the Ducks go in and take care of business in L.A.?
I really am tempted to pick USC to win this game, just playing off of what we were saying before. You know, the worst thing that can possibly happen for the Pac-12 generally seems to happen. Talent-wise, I think they're pretty equal. USC's had a lot of injuries. They are getting a couple guys back this week. They've been much better team at home under Clay Helton than on the road. Oregon had a really tough game deep into the night last week. They got to travel. I'm going to pick the upset. I think USC's going
to
win.
If that
happens and Utah loses, then USC is in the driver's seat to win the Pac-12 South, in which case it would be really hard to fire Clay Helton, which would, not be – that's not what USC fans want to hear. You know, they've been sort of ready to move on. And then all of a sudden, you know, you might be in a situation where, you know, you're playing for the Pac-12 championship again.
Alec?
Yeah, well, Oregon's the last couple games have gone down on the wire, right? Against Washington on the road, it had a fourth quarter comeback. Had a fourth quarter comeback against Washington State the week after, like Lev mentioned. It does have trap game written on it, but I think their defense keeps them in this one. Justin Herbert does just enough. They win by 5-6 points.
It's so funny how sort of identities have swapped in this series. It used to be Oregon came to town and they were high-flying and high-scoring and maybe a little soft, and USC had all the biggest, strongest dudes on the field. It's flipped now. I mean, Oregon, with Mario Cristobal's new approach, I mean, they're sort of SEC-level big, and they're very physical. And not to quote Michael Love from 5 minutes ago, but that stuff travels really well. And so I like Oregon to win that game.
Can Mario Cristobal get Oregon back to national dominance to a point where they're actually competing for a national championship?
They're on the brink at the moment.
Well, he's
recruited really well. People question his in-game coaching acumen.
Just because he's cost them 2 games in 2 years.
But they're number 7 in the country, so they're on the verge, and this is the kind of game you have to win in order to make that breakthrough. Who you got?
This is tough, but I do know that USC is still trying to get over the injury bug, right? What's the status with Marquise Stepp?
Out.
It's
going to be they're down to I'm forgetting his name. The sprinter from San Diego. Now we're all going to forget his name and look.
He's fast, though.
I'll pull up the roster.
Yeah,
he's
thank
fast.
You. But they're getting Christian Rector back at defensive end, which helps. But, you know, Drake Jackson's still out. There's still a bunch of guys who are still out. I mean, that's a concern for sure. What's your call, Justin?
You know, I'm going to go with the Ducks on the road just because, like I said, you know, I think both Oregon and Utah, they're both trending in that direction where they're going to meet up in the Pac-12 championship. Oregon really impressed me last weekend against Washington State. I know Washington State's had a down year this season, but, you know, Wazoo played Oregon, and they went up by, one possession? It was a one-possession game with about 1 minute left to play. And whenever Oregon is in tough situations, they just seem to overcome it. Last weekend against Washington State, a couple weeks ago against Washington on the road. So this team, they're tough as nails, and I like them on the road. I know it's going to be a tough game in the Coliseum, but I still like the Ducks coming out with the win.
And that USC running back, Keenan Christian.
Yeah, Keenan Christian, who burst onto the scene literally against Arizona. And I didn't know who he was, frankly, but apparently he's like a highly, highly decorated track star from the San Diego area who is just kind of waiting in the wings. As, you know, typical USC, like their fourth string running back is like the fastest guy in California. You know, that's how it goes.
By the way, big shout out to the city of San Diego.
619, yeah. Michael Love's wearing his brown Padre hat today, so I'm very impressed. No, he's not.
Steven Strasburg and Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard.
MVPs. All right, let's talk about
last one.
The last game before Arizona, Oregon State, Colorado against UCLA at the Rose Bowl. I don't know. I'm not sure what to think about this game, but I like the Bruins though.
The Bruins are kind of back in a way. I mean, they're playing a lot better. They have found their identity, which features a boatload of Joshua Kelly power running. DTR Got a little banged up last week, but he returned to practice this week. Looks like he's going to play. I think that UCLA is going to win, but I would not lay those 6.5 points comfortably. I feel like this is going to be a back-and-forth game, high-scoring game, something like 37-34. Colorado showed some spunk last week, fought USC down to the wire. They still have really good weapons on the outside. They can put up points against, you know, team the caliber of UCLA. I know they struggled against some of the big dogs in the league, but I'll take UCLA to win, but by fewer than the 6.5.
Yeah, I'm a J.J. Molson field goal at the buzzer kind of guy. I think that's what happens.
Because of his last name, or?
Oh, sure. And then they'll try to ice him, and then it'll be a Molson ice.
Molson ice.
Icing of Molson, yes. What you got?
Colorado trending in the wrong direction. Lost 4 in a row. UCLA trending in the right direction. They've won 2 in a row. I'll go UCLA.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the afternoon kickoff.
Did you pick that game, Justin?
I did. I picked the Bruins.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I'm going to go. Let's talk about the the upcoming game
yeah.
this afternoon, or Saturday afternoon. Arizona taking on Oregon State for a 1:30 p.m. kickoff. This game seems like a can't-lose for Arizona. You know, they fired Marcel Yates. They bring in Chuck Cecil. It's homecoming. They're wearing the Desert Swarm uniforms. It just seems like Arizona, there's no way in hell Arizona's going to drop this game. And like you said earlier, Ryan, you look at the last remaining games that they have, this is really the only winnable game. If they don't
say winnable.
Well they, of course, ASU
one
is
in which
winnable.
They're going to be favored.
But yeah. ASU is a winnable game for them. They're definitely not beating Oregon on the road. Utah, if they beat bully Washington and they win that game, I don't see any chance of Arizona beating Utah at home. So, I mean, Oregon State and ASU, these are the games that Arizona can win. And it's a must-win for them. And if they don't win this game, they're not going to a bowl game. With that being said, I got Arizona beating Oregon State. It's going to be a close-ish game, but I like the Wildcats holding them off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, if you're going to save the season, which I think was kind of the idea of the defensive coordinator change, you have to win this game. You know, it starts right now. Oregon State, plucky team, better than people think. They've, like I said, they've won two Pac-12 road games already, which is more than Arizona can say for itself in any recent season, I think. But they are vulnerable on defense, and I think the Wildcats are going to be really fired up. I do think the intangibles will play something of a role in this game. I've got Arizona winning 41-27.
I think it's a low-scoring game. I look at that over-under. What is it, 71?
71, yeah.
I'm taking the under. I think Arizona wins, but I think it's a physical, run-based, defense-heavy game. I'll take the Wildcats at home just because I know how hard it is to win on the road in the Pac-12. Arizona wins 24-14.
Alec?
This is a desperation game here for Arizona. Arizona's no questionably coming into this game with a more urgency, more desperation, season on the line. Oregon State, they're better, like Lev said, they're better than we thought they would be at this point. They've had a couple of Pac-12 road wins, which does kind of scare me. They won at UCLA. They won at Hawaii. They played Cal on the road and won at Cal, even though Cal's kind of gone down the drain the last couple of weeks. But this is a game I think it's going to be close. I'll go Arizona 32, Oregon State 24.
Interesting. 32, huh?
There's always some weird number in there.
All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Arizona playing Oregon State this Saturday at Arizona Stadium for homecoming. Kickoff is set for 1:30 p.m. Make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play for all the best coverage of the Arizona Wildcats. And also, make sure you follow the Wildcaster on Twitter as well, at the Wildcaster, and like us on Facebook and Instagram. Special thanks to Frog and Firkin, as always, for always hosting us, talking Arizona Wildcats football. For Ryan, for Alec, for Lev, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast Podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell, or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.